talk about your bad luck, Prof. Ock.
Oh, shit. Are you okay? I didn't mean to...
Hey, thanks, pal. Let's get this guy webbed up.
What? No, are you trying to hurt this old man?
Ugh. Look, I saw the portal. I know you're from another dimension. Got way too much experience with that, especially lately. So, trust me, I'm the good guy here, and Mr. Mechanical Arms is not.
You got glowing red eyes, man. How am I supposed to...
Yep, told you.
Disregard page 180. It's time to discuss the Invincible finale, and Dan Ryan and Plus Kev Bean are back in the hot seat to discuss the finale and what we thought of season 2 overall. We're also going to look at WrestleMania Saturday, as we're all feeling a little delicate there. All that and more still to come. You're very welcome to another edition of page 180. And guys, I'm not going to lie, I'm a little bit delicate today. Recording this on the Sunday after WrestleMania Saturday, which for anyone who follows on socials or knows us from Low Blows will know was the first Low Blows night we'd had in Woolshed in 7 years, and first Low Blows night altogether in 4 years. Very, very delicate, but I do want to come on. We wanted to get this done anyway because we had loads to talk about. I was even chatting to Kev last night and he's like, I have so much to say about Invincible. we wanted to get this done ASAP, but yeah, bear with us. We're all a little tender after WrestleMania Saturday. But first, I want to get kicked off with, for anyone who was there last night, I want to say a huge thank you, and just for being there, for remembering us. It is the most humbling thing. It is terrifying. I was talking to the missus beforehand, and she's been in on this. This started kind of like the planning of this started with like a 6 a.m. phone call with me and her, where I'm like just firing with ideas. I'm like, I can do this, and she's like, I think you want to do this again, and I'm like, yeah, I think I do. Yeah, she was kind of talking and being like, we were talking and saying that, you know, it's so scary, like, to kind of come back, because what if nobody shows up? What if everyone's like, yeah, we did that, and that was then, you know? Over 400 people packed out the Woolshed, and it wasn't even for the big night of WrestleMania, because we're just doing the Saturday this year. But guys, yeah, it was great to see so many old faces, so many new faces. I don't mean old faces as in you've gotten old. That's not what I'm saying. We have, but we don't talk about it. We'll stay classy about that. But so many newer faces and people that came to us and were like, we'd heard about this, and like we saw this when we were kids, but we were kids and now you're back and we can kind of come now. So it was really, really good. And like I said last night in Woolshed, the question we're getting asked is this a one-off? In theory, kind of. It was more a trial, think of it that way, and the question was, would you guys show up? And you showed up and you packed the house, and it was a great night. Nothing went wrong, there was no trouble, everyone was just happy to be there, great vibes. So I'm gonna do everything in my power to make sure this isn't a one-off. I'm back. I am in this mode again. I want this again. And that's thanks to you guys and the support you've shown. So keep your eyes out. I will have news for you. But great night. And thank you all for coming. Thank you indeed also to Fan Club's Kev Keen joining us to discuss Invincible again. You were there last night. How did you find it? Because obviously we know each other through, like, obviously you would have attended the parties back in the day. Yeah. How was it to be back?
It was really nostalgic. It just even seeing Jerry Saul at the door. I got to sing Star Jers with Jerry at the door as well, which was
amazing.
But yeah, even just walking back into the place, and you can kind of just see some people dressed up, and there's I think I walked in and you're in the middle of the quiz actually when I got there as well. Nice. And even just that, and then there was the costume contest as well, and just all the madness that goes with it as well. It's just brilliant. Yeah, it's an indescribable kind of atmosphere in there as well. You just kind of have to be there. It's one of those things you just have to be there for too. And just having that many people so interested in this, I suppose, like, niche kind of thing as well. It's just wonderful. It's really, really cool. And they're just so into it and they're passionate about it. And like you said, it's classy and so many younger people there. Yeah. Like we've been there from, what was it, 2016, I think was my first one maybe.
nearly a decade
ago, yeah. Absolutely insane. So yeah, it's been great going from that, and then just seeing all the kind of the still interest in it as well from it from a younger crowd too. So yeah, it was great. Absolute congratulations on it, man. It was absolutely brilliant night.
Yeah, it was awesome. Wrestling is cool again, and it's a very,
Yeah.
very cool thing to see. Also, as well, I want to check in with someone who we don't get to hear much discussion about wrestling, but he is someone that we should hear about. Ladies and gentlemen, also joining us as always, to discuss Invincible, but we're gonna get checking in his thoughts on WrestleMania. It is none other than Dan. Because Dan, like. Obviously, a lot of people will know, but we don't kind of talk about this that much. But if there was and I'm not just blowing smoke, this is just facts. If there was an Irish Wrestling Hall of Fame tomorrow, you would be first ballot. Like, you'd be in it. The Heretic Red Vinnie, for anyone who doesn't know, like, if you just listen to this and hear Dan's voice and you don't watch the videos or recognize it and you're an old school Irish wrestling fan, this is the Heretic Red Vinnie we're talking to. Obviously, look, you know your shit about wrestling, but we don't get to hear you talk much about wrestling because we're here talking about other stuff. What were your thoughts on WrestleMania? I'd love to check in and see how you're feeling about it. Like, are you still regularly watching, or do you just check in for the big pay-per-views, or kind of, and what are your thoughts on kind of the turn wrestling's taken and then also last night?
I'm gonna hit you with a weird one for the intro to this. Have you ever seen Tree Man and Little Lady? The
No, I don't think I
80s movie.
have.
Okay.
No.
Tom Selleck, he's this like aging old sports fan. I think he was a journalist or something. And I have become him as it pertains to wrestling. When I'm with important people, I'm standing up going, see what you're doing here. It's absolutely fantastic. Like, and that's what I wanted to be. I wanted to be one of those has-beens that was like, I was there. The ongoing joke this week that everyone had to listen to was me putting myself over because I wrestled both Walter and Sami Zayn nine times between them. None of them ever bet me. Just put that out there. Intercontinental champion right here. Travesty, I was robbed.
Technically, you are the Intercontinental Champion then. Like, I think that's how that works.
I've beaten
Like,
Walter before it was cool.
nice, nice.
No, wrestling has become cool again, and I love being that kind of guy. Like I said, the Tom Selleck and Tree Man Little Lady, weirdest reference ever. But it's something I genuinely enjoy. It's something as now a fan, I love to analyze. It's something I really enjoy the storytelling aspect of. And now that you've said it yourself, wrestling's cool again. It's a great time to be a fan. It's a great time to be a has-been. And it's just something you can really, really enjoy. I'm loving the new production they're taking. The Kevin Dunn days are thankfully long behind
Yes.
us. What they're doing with the camera, what they're doing with the personalization of the show. If you're not a wrestling fan, now's the time to jump on. We've been promised a lot of exciting things. I think everyone's going to ramp the gears up, and WrestleMania really did feel like something special last night. So I had an absolute blast, and it was a fantastic show.
And like, just the TKO-ness of it all just works. Like, they just get it. They get how to do that big production without it feeling kind of dirty or seedy like it had felt maybe in the past few years under Vince McMahon. Like, it just works. Like, whatever they're buying, I'm selling, and I can't wait for more. So exciting times. But we're not here to discuss WrestleMania. We just wanted to touch on it, and I imagine a lot of you guys who followed us over from the Low Blows days wanted to kind of get some check in on that as well. We are here to discuss Invincible, and we're here to discuss this season finale of Invincible. Already, it feels like we're just getting started. The season two finale, and of course, guys, we are going into the spoiler verse. Okay, so you are not in a spoiler free zone. If you haven't watched the episode, go watch the episode. Come back, listen to us again. If you continue to listen, you haven't watched the episode, don't at me. Don't at me. I warned you here. We are going to talk about everything up to date on the TV show, including this episode. We're going to talk as well. We have a comic book guru in Dan Lynham here, so we're going to pick his brain for information and little nuggets as well, and little previews and stuff that we can kind of watch out for. But obviously, we're not going to talk about anything in the comics going forward in terms of plot. We're not going to be spoiling anything that comes there because me and Kev haven't read the comics, and we'd be angry as well if that happened. So don't worry, you are safe from that standpoint. But before we get to discussing the episode, as we always do, we're going to talk about we'll put you back in the mindset of what exactly happened, as we always do, with our alt recap. And let's get that underway for the Invincible finale. And we open as Omni-Man appears to be staging a jailbreak, but as Krieg shows up, it turns out it was just a test to determine if he was recovered enough to be executed. If ever there was a time to put on your best sicky voice, man, come on, like, amateur move, like, look how strong I am. That's the reason they're going to murder you, you idiot. Mark gets home to find Debbie and Oliver being held hostage by Angstrom Levy, who he calls that guy, which is, to be fair, is what half of the audience who haven't read the comics knew him as, because it was so long since he was in the show. Angstrom fights off Mark's attempts to attack him by sending him into other multiverses, where he mixes it up with the Land Before Time if they were all murderous, Fortnite, Spider-Man and Professor Ock and The Walking Dead, among others. Unfortunately, they did send us to a multiverse where the series didn't air in two parts, so it took me a second to remember that Angstrom had those multiverse powers. Mark reminds him that he was a good person once, he tried to save him, which sends Angstrom into a memory spiral at times Mark killed people he loved in other dimensions. After he breaks Debbie's arm in a fit of rage, Mark proves that he's not a murderous psycho by taking Angstrom to another dimension and viciously murdering him. As Mark processes this, he quickly realizes that killing your multiverse travel guide presents problems and leaves him stuck in this dimension, at least until an older Adam Eve, who's so heartbroken that she got a shag haircut, tries to groom him. Are we playing by Back to the Future rules here, by the way? Because as older robot Rex points out, I think if she tells him that she loves him, future Eve then fades away, if that's what we're playing by. But I don't really understand the time travel rules here. Nolan encounters Alan on the Viltrumite prison ship as his telepathy and his telepathy has Omni-Man go full Elton John, like, I miss it so much, I miss my wife. Meanwhile, Robot asks Monster Girl out on a second date where Duplicate reveals to Immortal she's always been hiding behind Duplicate, which is sweet for them, but also means they never actually fucked or like had any dates or anything like that, which is kind of weird. Mark quits college and doesn't tell Eve he loves her because he's that person in your friend group who has to take the most dramatic option at every stage of his love life for no good reason. And that is season two of Invincible, guys. We're pretty much done. And emotional, exciting season two finale. That's kind of what happened. I want to check in on your guys' thoughts. Dan, we'll start with yourself, obviously, because you know you're coming at this reading the comic. I guess the first question I want to kind of ask is, as a comic book reader, because Robert Kirkman, the creator of the comics and obviously works heavily within this show, I think he wrote this episode himself as well, has said that a large part of the challenge in this was finding ways to break the comics into seasons and finding events. Was this something that struck you as a comic book reader as that should be the season two finale? That's where I'd put the pin. And if so, how do you feel the episode as a whole landed?
Well, the first thing that I noticed is that they have been doing this a lot. We've discussed it numerous times, but like in this episode, more than any, so much was taken directly out of the comics, and their ability to relate it from that medium into this one is really, really genuinely impressive. And it, as a comic book fan, it felt like that we were really getting rewarded for an investment in this, which I really do appreciate, because I always feel like a lot of companies will always look how they can move into a new market. And sometimes that's at the detriment to their core fan base. And the one thing that Invincible is not doing is that it's not forsaking that core audience that brought it to this point. So as a comic book fan, I'm really genuinely enjoying what they're doing. And with Angstrom becoming this escalating villain that we're going to see over the next few seasons, I guarantee whatever you think he's going to do, you have no idea. But I really, really kind of like the pacing of what they're doing. I thought maybe the show felt a bit inverted for me, that the Angstrom stuff, even though they set it up at the end of the last episode, maybe should have been the excitement to give us the conclusion of the season, and maybe the exposition that followed could have happened in between or something. But apart from that, as a comic book fan, I felt like that we were really given a little bit of a thanks for sticking with us, here's your reward. I really appreciated that.
Okay, interesting. Obviously, Kev, we're looking at it through a different lens, and we're just taking this kind of at face value. We're going to get into overall thoughts of season two, like kind of towards the end, but what were your thoughts on the finale specifically?
I don't know, like the Angstrom Lee stuff, to me, I loved the beginning of it. I thought like Dan was saying last week, wait till you see how he uses his powers. And I was blown away by that. I thought it was actually class how he was able to fuck with Mark a lot. But you said, Dan, as well there, that like he'll be in next seasons to come. Is he not dead now? Or is this...
There was little things he hinted at, and I thought, like, you know, with a lot of people kind of thinking like, where he's dead, but of course there's multiversal elements to it. But he talked about his body being like brought up to a next level, and I kind of figured that that was enough of a thing for to say that he'll be back. And because we talked about him so much before, that I don't know if it's really a spoiler, because looking back at it, it seems like that. You know, there is a lot of other elements we could have. There was seemed a lot of stuff unfinished. So I thought it was pretty obvious that this character is going to be around again in some way. But yes, we saw Angstrom being killed. But like I said, not as much of a spoiler. I think if people watch stuff back, a lot of stuff will start clicking.
I think as well, though, like whenever you have a multiverse scenario, like someone can always show up again. You know what I mean? So like, again, it's not like, I don't know. I can't comment. I don't know any of the story, and I don't know in the head, but like, I'd assume this version of Angstrom is very much dead, because like, again, we saw the blood, we saw kind of the
so
like,
much blood.
Yeah, he has to be physically. Now maybe not, like, but I'm guessing. But I don't know if I take that as a spoiler, because it's there's a multiverse element to the show now. We know that future Guardians have a time machine that's now being introduced. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see Angstrom in play for future reference.
Yeah, I
suppose
so
the Green Goblin die and stuff like that, like, you know, Superman, Batman, and that's kind of what I'm hinting at. I thought like that, like maybe like looking into the comics already, and might have been a slight faux pas on my side, but like I would say, if anyone thinks this is a spoiler, just go back and have a look at some of the stuff that Angstrom was saying. I think stuff might fall into place.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, because that was just something, I suppose. I don't know, to me it just felt like a one and done kind of thing. I was just like, well, that was a bit of a dud to me. But and then I suppose just this felt very, maybe it's just very Empire Strikes Back, where it's just ending on this really somber note, I think, for the whole thing. But it didn't, I don't know, it didn't really grip me into like, I'm really excited for season 3 of this.
Yeah.
At the end of it. Even Duplicate's reveal, I thought, was a bit. I love the idea that Immortal, because I think it was the last episode, said that he'd never have someone. He's never like he's outgrown people, but he's never had someone, I think, die on him. And I thought that was a really interesting wrinkle on his character. And then she's just back again, and it's, I don't know. Maybe there'd be more of a dynamic from that as well. But I didn't love this as a finale.
I think I'm in the middle. I think this is an interesting dichotomy that we've got a dynamic on the show, because I'm excited on one half, but I find myself being excited for the show based off the conversations I have with Dan. I do feel the show, and not being a comic book reader, but I do feel that clearly from what Dan says, the show is serving its core audience and the people that brought it there very, very well. And again, with that in mind, Dan knows what's coming. So he's like, oh, that's setting up that, and that's setting up that, and that's fucking deadly. You know what I mean? So that's where I'm excited, and I haven't lost faith in the show. But I do think the show is struggling somewhat to adapt it to an audience that hasn't seen it and maybe doesn't know how to read the text as closely as other people. So there's bigger picture issues, and I'll kind of dip into my own thoughts on that in terms of like my reflections on the season. I thought this was an enjoyable episode of television. I did enjoy it. I think compared to last one season one finale, and I don't think it's fair to compare finales. Like, I don't think you have to be as good or better than the last season and so on. But just to kind of compare, it wasn't really a patch. Invincible now is settling more into like a BAU kind of comic book story, where and again, like, not that it is, like, it's much more extreme in a lot of ways. There's a lot more kind of relatable humor and stuff like that as well. And we got like stuff like the cameos and stuff there I want to touch on a bit. But like, it can do stuff like that, but we're kind of used to that tone by now. And the beats of the character beats are much more standard comic beats, which again, I just don't feel that season 1 prepared me for. I felt that season 1 kind of set me up for this show where anything can happen in any week. And it's like, this guy's the bad guy now. And then like, that guy can like destroy the world, and they just kind of disappeared into a portal. And where are they going to go? And are they going to come back? And what's going to happen here? And what the fuck is going on? And like, I'll never forget, like, This is such a small scene, but it's Omni-Man and Debbie go out for like coffee in Paris, and in the background, like a giant squid starts destroying the city, and Omni-Man is just there, like, yeah, someone else will get it. I'm having coffee. So anyway, do you love me? You know what I mean? And having that conversation and the casualness of kind of the chaos that's in this universe, and that's what kind of was established in season one. I think season two has lost that a little bit and gotten bogged down in the character of it all, and that's probably going to be necessary. And I guess, like, kind of, I look at season two of The Wire sometimes as kind of an example of that, where it's like we just need to ground the characters and set them back up for what's going to come. And I kind of hope that it's something like that. But I did enjoy this episode. Like, I thought Angstrom and Mark's fight was really fun and intense. I loved the cameos and the stakes felt high throughout it. I thought Debbie's arm break in particular was absolutely sick, and really hit in the way that they wanted to. And it was nice to see both Mark's strength and his naivety both used for and against him. The voice acting throughout was absolutely fantastic. I've never, throughout the course of this series, thought the voice acting quality was as high, and this is fantastic. Like, look at the cast that they have. They have an A-list cast. So to say that is particularly notable. Stephen Young, in that moment where he had to try and rationalize and process what he did, and he has to do everything with just his voice and the artwork that he's given, you know, but he fucking nailed it, where he's like, you know, you needed to do it. You needed to do it, but you wanted to do it. And then, like, he just took us through that monologue throughout, which could have been weird and it could have been hokey and it could have been shit, but the voice acting nailed it and made it exactly what it needed to be. Sandra Oh in particular was absolutely astounding. Like, that moment where she's trying to reassure Oliver and, like, but she's on the verge of passing out, and she's trying to say she's okay and be a mother, reassuring their child, but she's really not okay. She nailed that. And I'll speak about Sterling K. Brown in a moment. I thought he was excellent as Angstrom, though. The series is so much better for me when it is zooming in on one aspect and doing that really well. And I think that's what this episode did. So it played to the show's strengths. And the relatively kind of singular focus here for me meant they could just focus on telling this story, which helped a lot. I think there are bigger picture issues or concerns, not issues, I'd say concerns for now, that I'll discuss shortly, that ties into how I feel about the season as a whole. But for me, I thought this was an enjoyable hour of TV. Is it a season finale that absolutely blew my mind? No, it's not. But it was a good hour of TV. I enjoyed it. And Invincible is still a show that I really like. So I don't really have complaints, but maybe I had expectations based off how high they set the bar in season one, and I'm just waiting for them to get back up there. I haven't lost faith that they will. But I'm okay kind of writing this season maybe and this finale off as a bit of a lull, like just a step down. If season one was a 10, you know, maybe this season and the finale was a 7, and a 7's still a good TV show. But that's kind of where I'm at. But let's talk about Angstrom Levy in specific there. So, Kev, I want to get your thoughts on having not watched it, because I imagine you'll kind of fall in line with where I am. Did this feel like a big bad? Did this feel like the finale big bad and the stakes that happened, and obviously Angstrom dying? And again, like, keep in mind, Angstrom dying is a character device to motivate Mark and show us that, like, that is what they're telling us there is, Mark is listening to Omni-Man talk in episode 4, where he said, "Stop holding yourself back. These people are going to kill you. You need to be able to kill." And Mark let loose that side of him, and he showed us the true Viltrumite he has inside. So that's where I think Angstrom is relevant, in this part of the story. But how did this feel in terms of, like, as a finale, big bad villain? How did and, like, kind of his death as well? How did that kind of hit with you? You've touched on it already, but kind of expand more, maybe.
Like, for the most part, like, I really did enjoy the fight between Mark and Angstrom. I thought it was great. I might have liked a little bit more build up with Angstrom throughout the season. He kind of just came out of nowhere at the end of the last episode, and this was, I don't know, it's kind of just thrown in your face a little bit of like, this is this big bad. I would have liked it maybe a little bit more, but I loved his. He's got this repressed, like he saves Mark from the machine, again, the machine, because he doesn't want blood spilled, and he's repressed that memory so much and is angering him and then as well. And I liked how it kind of went through. And it was really disturbing as well, actually, the different versions of Mark that he's seen and that have killed him. Like that one scene of all the people just like on their knees and he's just chopping the heads Holy shit. Like, that
Fucking
was
hell.
brutal, man. So it's interesting. I also think it was really interesting that he's never encountered Oliver before. So I'm wondering, like, the only thing I had in my head is like, is there, because he talks about as well, Debbie's usually side with Mark and Nolan. And is this Debbie, because she rejected Nolan, is she the only one that would have taken, well, Nolan might not have even gone to another planet to have another baby. Or if he does she reject the baby all the time then as well? And is this the only version of Debbie that like might have taken Oliver in? And that's why he's only seen him. So yeah, I thought that was really, really well done. And I love that that's potentially setting up hopefully for something. But yeah, I love the fight. I thought the fight was great. I thought the animation was brilliant, but it just kind of left me a little bit. Now, obviously I was wrong. I need to go back and relook at some of the stuff he was saying when he actually did kill him. I was like, huh, that was a little anticlimactic for me. But yeah, like I did love the oh, it's that scene of Mark and he's just red from the blood as well. And I thought you were stronger. Yeah, I thought you said you were stronger. That line being repeated over and over again was really, really well done to me as well. But yeah, initially I just kind of thought, oh, that's a bit anticlimactic with the way he just kind of went. But before that, I loved it. But I just would have wished maybe a little bit more introduction of him throughout the season, maybe.
Yeah, I totally agree because I loved Angstrom when he's there. Okay, Sterling K. Brown is amazing. Like he's just an amazing actor in general. Everything he's in, he hits it out of the park. He was in American Fiction. If you're looking for more Sterling K. Brown content, he can do anything. He's in, I think, as well. He was in Silo, and I think he was in the best part of that as well. Like he was when it was at his most engaging his part. He's in. He's got just this distinctive voice and line delivery. Like it elevates every word that he says. He's dripping in kind of feeling and emotion. And like again, at one stage, Angstrom is like trying to be this big bad guy who seems to have it all under control, but he's triggered by his traumas, you know, and that's all there in dripping in every word that Sterling K. Brown says, whether it's relevant or not. I thought his backstory was great. I loved that. Like, yeah, again, you talk about that scene. That was the one that stuck with me, the beheading scene, but also like the little things like the kids, you know, Mark just being genocidal and absolutely destroying the city. When he beheads the two cops and doesn't behead Angstrom for whatever reason, like, is Mark bullying this guy through multi dimensions and just like traumatizing him over and over. What I liked as well, though, was about there's a bit of a Batman Joker element to Mark and Angstrom in this dimension. What I love about it is like Mark and Debbie are kind of like, we're the good guys in this dimension and you're the bad guy. But then Angstrom brings out that side in Mark. And that's the Batman Joker thing that I'm getting into, you know, because Joker was never about beating Batman. Joker was about getting Batman to corrupt himself. And that's how Joker won. And Angstrom successfully made Mark corrupt himself here, you know, and that's kind of the really interesting kind of string that I pull in it. Because again, at every time Mark is saying, like, it's fine, I'm a good guy, I just want to protect my mother. And then he becomes a murderer by the end of it, and kind of feeling like he got what he deserves by being stranded in the other dimension. I liked the death from that standpoint because I didn't expect Angstrom to die at this stage. I thought he'd be more significant. And I liked the dynamic that that left, where I'm like, ha, Mark, you're fucked. I didn't like the Deus Ex Machina element of the Guardians coming in. I think there's an interesting thing that now they have time machines in the future. But I didn't like the fact that Mark was just instantly saved, although they had to get him back to the present timeline, obviously, in some way. I'm with you, though. I just wanted more of him. I didn't want that backstory to be told to me when he's already introduces the big bad in the finale in kind of a montage. I wanted that to be drip fed to me throughout the season so that when he shows up in the finale, I'm like, shit, like he is not gonna rest. He's gonna kill Debbie. I felt we had to learn a lot of those things in the moment. You know what I mean? I felt like I didn't know if he was gonna kill Debbie and Oliver. You know, I didn't know if he was gonna flip. I didn't know how he was gonna react to Mark. And I felt they could have given, if they'd have given us those character beats steadily throughout the season, I would have known those things, which would have made the stakes higher, which would have meant I know what Angstrom's going to do and not going to do, what Mark says is going to land with Angstrom, and then drive him to do something else. Like you have that thing where it's like, that is not the thing to say here to him. He's going to kill Debbie because you just reminded him that he saved him. Whereas you're kind of reactive and you're one step behind kind of in learning that. So I don't have a problem with anything that happened, but I just wanted it to happen in a different order, if that makes sense, so that it hit a bit more. But Dan, kind of want to check in with yourself and kind of how did you feel that this compared side by side? Obviously, a lot of it is beat for beat, but like when this battle happened in the comics, was it something that was Angstrom more established, or is this like for like? It's like you learn all this stuff at the same time, or like how did the adaptation kind of compare side by side with the comics?
Very accurately. The one thing that you said, which actually kind of made me think back on how Angstrom was introduced in the comics, was his initial build up with the Brawler twins, who I know you're really missing this season as well. That was done a lot more drawn out. So we had the pre-tragedy Angstrom, who, for all intents and purposes, seemed like he was almost going to become Invincible's ally. Like, for sake of a better phrase we've all become accustomed to, he would look like he was going down the road of a guy in a chair. You know, he would be that sort of persona for Mark. He would have access to stuff like that maybe work side by side with Robot. And there was a lot of guessing there. So we were well aware of this character and kind of formulating stuff. And when the event we've already seen play out in, it was season one, or no, it was beginning of season two, where Angstrom obviously has his accidents, the multi-dimensional one, which leaves him disfigured. That probably hit a bit harder in the comics because we had a bit more of a build-up that was done in minor panels for a lot of issues. So we were well aware of Angstrom. So when he did show up, as he did in this episode, it had probably had a bit more gravitas to it all right in the comics because we, the reader, knew who he was. But they played the thing very well in this that they did in the comics, which was that Mark just did not remember him. Because why would he? For all intents and purposes, Mark saved him. Yeah. There was a detonation and it was a minor tragedy, but it was the Brawler twins' fault. So when Angstrom shows up now, and they showed it quite well, let's say I completely agree with both of you guys. The way they did those jumps were just incredibly shocking, even if it could have been drawn out a bit more. And we see that just Angstrom can't remember which Mark he's dealing with. In his head, every version of himself is combined into this one unit. His multi-dimensional versions are just amalgamated together. And there is that kind of element of, which I like in comics, is this really all Angstrom's fault? You know, things went wrong. He's confused. He needs help. And he's lashing out in a very destructive way because he just sees Mark as a villain and he can't come to terms with that. So for reasons like that, I think maybe the comics hit a little bit harder. And I suppose from my point of view as well, having read the comics so many times and being a proper fan who really appreciates the story, I guess you do spot things that would take, you know, a watch or two. So I'm interested to see once again if they're going to do this shift from the source material again. So who knows what could happen?
Yeah, interesting times. One thing that I really loved about the episode and I think gave it that finale type feel was the cameos through different dimensions. Love this. Yeah. As opposed to, again, I'll always bring this up, but it deserves to get ragged. The similar thing that they had in the Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness movie where it's like, oh my God, pizzas are circles and red lights are go, what? And it's just like... It was really fun that they brought in the likes of Spider-Man, Batman, The Walking Dead, Fortnite, you know, the dinosaurs as well. Like, I loved kind of the crossovers and stuff. Dan, that's something that the comic actually has, I'm after learning this week, there's a history of this. Without giving away anything that may still happen or anything still to come, there is a history of this with Invincible, right? Kind of talk us through that.
There is, like, the multiversal thing. I mean, they were very, very careful with how they did certain elements. The Batman scene in this was frame for frame. The conversation was, as far as I can remember, pretty much word for word. The Spider-Man one, I'd say, they took a few liberties with. We got this Gray Spider versus Doctor
Professor
Octopodes,
Rock, I think
maybe.
they're called.
Professor.
Professor. So, but in the comics, the way they did this was you could he flew at Dr. Octopus. You could see the green outfit, but you couldn't see his face. And then you could see a webbed red glove. And when he returned to his dimension, there was a very obvious spider web like trailing off his ass. So I think the Batman thing was easier to do and get away with, but the Spider-Man one might have been pushing it too much. But I like that. It's multi-dimensional stuff in comics has always been there, and it is a bit of a crutch for some stories to lean on. I think at the time, Invincible and the comics wanted to show what else you could do with this, and by pushing that envelope in that way, and treading on the lines of trademark infringement, it just stopped. It broke down this wall what every company has of their own multiverse. You've got obviously the Marvel multiverse. You've got the Infinity Verse in the DC and so on and so forth. Everyone has it, but I think it was almost in a way poking fun at that. That even though we have these multiverses, we have multiverses within trademark law. So just watch it. So I like that they poked the bear in that regards.
The one thing that is not multiversal is trademark law. You know what I mean? Like, that is, in no multiverse law do trademarks get
Yeah,
disrespected. But they
there's a
did
bunch of
well.
these just like stoogey little lawyers in between like the worlds. We've all
Yeah.
seen that.
The
Yeah,
real
it's been done
watchers. The real
in a
watcher
row.
is
Yeah.
the lawyer. That's good. And I know Invincible actually, I'm right in saying Invincible and Marvel actually, they did an actual crossover series episode or a comic, or was it a comic? Was it an edition or a series or?
They did, yeah. God, I can't remember what it was exactly, but I
Sorry,
know
Rob.
like then there was some connection with at the time Jim Lee, who was working with DC specifically, who he then went on to become president
That's
of,
cool.
was doing covers for them as well. So there was always that connection. But especially with Image comics, we discussed briefly the whole story behind them, that disgruntled employees from both DC and Marvel really becoming the ECW of the comics industry, left the big two, joined their little rogue thing, and ended up
Love it.
changing the business. Like the parallels between WWF and ECW with Image, Marvel, and DC, it's if you know one story, you know the other one word for word. And as much as Image left and created this new way of telling stories, while Marvel and DC's sales were dropping in the late 90s, they were like, well, let's steal Paul Heyman, I mean Todd McFarlane's ideas. And they did. And so for that reason, they just kept going back to their well of the guys they let go. So there was this kind of, I don't want to say like the sentiment of apology that they felt for these guys for not listening to them. Here they are making loads of money, even to this day, with stuff like Invincible. Image Comics are still relevant. Unfortunately, ECW barring the Hall of Fame this year, which, in some ways isn't relevant. So, like, Image did change the industry, and Marvel and DC were a bit penitent for that for a few years. And I think they've been
Interesting.
quite okay with Image just testing these universally lawyer patrolled boundaries.
You're speaking my language at the WWE, WCW, and ECW comparison. I want to look into that more. I like it. And as well, though, like we used to see that stuff in wrestling. Like ECW did, of course, we had the invasion angle, but before that, ECW did a little invasion in WWE and stuff like that. So it's cool when that happens. And like, why not just get together and just say, here, look, we'll pay you this for the licensing for like 30 seconds and stuff like that as well. And just give us what we want. It happened in the comics, though, and that gives me faith that we could get more of that. Little cool note as well, Spider-Man, and this was voice by or Agent Spider, as he was called on the notes on Amazon Prime. He was voiced by Josh Keaton, who voiced the Spectacular Spider-Man animated series and also had a cameo in Across the Spider-Verse as well. Which of these cameos were you into? Were any particular standouts, or was this something that worked for you, Kev? What were your thoughts on this?
I loved the Batman one in particular. That was great. Also, the talking dinosaurs just threw me for a loop as well. It was weird enough for me to be like, that was actually class, where they've become the dominant species. They can talk, and they're surprised when Mark can talk as well. I really love that. But yeah, I thought, yeah, the one thing I actually wanted to ask as well is, Angstrom mentioned something about time moving differently in some of them. Has Mark been in a few of them for like ages? Or are
I
they
think the camp one implied when he was sitting at
Yeah.
the camp and being like, and then he can change multiverses. So that implied that he'd been there for a long time. Well, not a long time, but long enough to meet these people,
Yeah.
calm them down, sit with them, and tell them the full story. So yeah,
I
I
wonder how
imagine.
long he was there.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's
Yeah.
something genuinely in this one. I'm gonna wash my hands of.
Okay. Okay.
Oh.
Okay, interesting. Okay, there could be implications. Okay, well done. You've hit on
Interesting.
something there, Kev. Well played. Let's touch on Nolan and Alan because that seems to be something that they've set up quite strongly for season three. Again, kind of we saw Omni-Man is kind of getting back to full strength. He has an ally, and he's having kind of an existential kind of moment. Kev, what was your thoughts on this? Do you have any takeaways on these guys? For me, I was like, I wanted a little bit more, but I'm okay with them leaving it for season three because I'm like, let's just focus on the main storyline for a while. Let's just get rid of the ADHD and focus on this. But I also like Omni-Man, and I always want more of him in this show. So it was kind of caught between two. Where were you kind of sitting on this?
Yeah, I that was one of the things I suppose that I was a bit disappointed about with this episode. From the way the last episode ended, I did think we were going to get some kind of jailbreak storyline, I suppose, going on, and it was just my expectations. I think I had it was my own expectations. This is probably on me more than anything else, because it is going to be probably a great thing for season three just to look forward to. But I wanted more, but I loved their interaction. I thought it was great. Yeah, the way Alan was able to just talk, communicate with him and Nolan be like, what the fuck? I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was weird, I suppose, as well. They kind of go through all this hullabaloo of making sure everyone's up to their full strength, but they're like, but you can still have a few bruises on you as well. I thought that was a bit odd. Because it's all about like honor and stuff like that. But yeah, overall I thought it was great. I wanted maybe the jailbreak scene to be this episode, but I'm happy to look forward to it in season three though as well.
Yeah, they have a nice odd couple element. I liked also Nolan pushing back on a couple of things, like just being like a bit of a dick, like being like, "Oh, hey, alien," and he's like, "You know, it's Alan." So it could be potentially good in a kind of Game of Thrones, like the Hound and Arya kind of like two people
Yeah.
we don't expect to see interact that actually have great chemistry. I they kind of set that up a little bit. Dan, what were your thoughts? Is this something you're looking forward to? A strand you're looking forward to?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with Kevin this way. I thought, excuse me, my big criticism of this episode was it was an episode of two parts and a very distinctive two parts. There was Angstrom, the Fallout, bang, part two starts now. And part two was very disenfranchised. And I did think after what we kind of saw last week with Alan being kidnapped, I was like, right, okay, I know where this is going. And they're setting everything up, so why not deliver? It's like Kev said, they were going a very specific direction in this and they just didn't pull the trigger. And also, like you totally touched on as well, they definitely didn't hit with the Nolan capture stuff in this way they did, Kev, what they did in the comics. I was even looking at going, the way they're kind of approaching this just feels like they're after writing themselves into a corner and they're like, oh, hang on, maybe this just isn't going to translate in on the TV show. Let's just stick it in anyway, see what they think of it. That's how it felt to me, and it that was kind of lazy. A few little changes to the screenplay could have easily corrected this stuff, or change it up a little bit. Have these two guys as just these two bullies who are maybe knocking Nolan around a bit. If you need to draw this out, write it a different way. You don't have to stick to everything the exact same way, especially when it doesn't work. So yeah, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more of this. The post credit scene was something that I thought was going to be maybe in the second iteration of telling the three parts of the story, of which we only got one in this episode. The introduction, the initial conversation, which is a post-credit scene, and then XYZ. So to kind of like to pull that right into the end credit scene is the big payoff for the entire season. As I commented, that there was, in my mind, there was two very specific things they could have done that might have made season three a bit more, okay, we can't miss this. And then even in the kind of post first Avengers Marvel post credit scene, they always have the jokey post credit scene for those who want to see who this third unit sound director was at the end of the like soundtrack. And then you get this really patronizing short 20-second scene of them eating shawarma. There was another scene that they didn't approach that I thought would have fit in really here and tied stuff into the season. So I did find in my second, in the second part of the episode, I kind of thinking like, why have they made these decisions when you've got such great source material and that excitement you established in the first half of this episode, you lost. I mean, let's do another WrestleMania comparison. Last night, the longest match of all time was that main event, if you include the panel, the intro video, the entrances, and then the match itself. But once again, one thing that these guys in specific do is that great pacing, the slow build. A friend of mine who was there last night isn't a wrestling fan, and that was the match he actually sat down to watch. The spectacle was great. The build up was old school carny wrestling, and then the ending, there was the payoff. Invincible this week, in my opinion, did the exact opposite. Went in hot, and it just lost its steam, and that's how I felt.
I think that's a very good point. And there were some choices as well that I was just like, I don't understand that. Like, for me, the post-credit scene, when Nolan turned around and said, "I miss my wife," for me, that just came out of nowhere. And I genuinely thought, which wife? Because he actually seemed to have more warmth in the show with Andressa than he did with Debbie. Like, I'm like,
Let's
I've
change this up
never.
real quick. Actually, one thing that we could change is let's just say that the Nolan and Alan interaction, the alien thing, was the opening scene of this episode. And then we get the angstrom stuff and it kind of deviates back and forth. Imagine if we actually got a scene in this, that scene, the post-credit scene, take it and put it into the first third of the show. And with Nolan's line, "I miss my wife," cuts back to Debbie with the broken arm, maybe when Cecil shows up. This is a better way of telling that story. And then you have so much more to work with. You're changing the pacing. Are you changing how much you're cramming in? No. And it could have made it better. So when I see these decisions, and great, granted, in hindsight, writing someone else's story that's already written as a viewer is a very easy thing to do. And being having worked on narratives, working on TV, yes, there is a lot of, "Hey, why did you do that? This would have been better." You're like, "Yes, that would have been better." Disappointed in yourself for not thinking about it. So I'm not gonna like hold them to task over this, but this just seemed a bit more obvious than some other things are. Why wasn't it told that way?
Like, because again, that "I miss my wife" is such a confusing note to end the series on. And in a post-credit scene, like, but not every comic book story needs to have a post-credit scene, especially a finale. You can just rest on this is enough. We've told the story for this season we wanted to tell. But I felt like they threw it there because they felt they needed to, and that was a bombshell that they had. But it was a bombshell because it made no sense. It was a bombshell because we're like, we've no context for that. But yeah, if you had put it into the show earlier, you wouldn't have had that expectation that you have. Where he's going to say something now that it's a post-credit scene, so this is our big to be continued moment. And I'm like, well, yeah, it does have to be continued because I know nothing about this. Like, that's never been a thing that you've indicated was possible. So I totally agree. Structuring it differently, I would have been fine with it, but put it as a post-credit scene, and I've got notes.
There's one more thing that I just want to really touch on quickly about this that I thought was interesting, because that scene in the comics once again was panel for panel, and this is really getting into the nerdy, did you know, nitty gritty stuff that like nerds like me spend
Love
their
it.
lives wrapped around with. The original framing in the comic was fantastic. It was very moody, very dark, and stuff like that, because the comic page itself got quite famous because Ryan Ottley, the artist, his kid got a hold of the comic book page when he had left the room and colored all over it. So he had to redraw the page, but instead of doing it from scratch, he just added a ton of shadows, which made this just such a significant statement. So it's funny that you said this. So the comics, this was a very specifically famous page. He talked about it at the end of one of the graphic novels, that "my son destroyed my work that I was working right on." So by doing so, it got better because he added all these shadows to cover up all these crayon marks. And it became very significant, and it hit hard in the comics because it is faux pas. And now you guys saying because it was used in this as the post credit scene, it kind of was weak, which I agree with. It's so strange the parallels between the two again.
Yeah, and maybe that's a thing where they're kind of appeasing the source material, because maybe that's why it was the post-credit scene, because it's like, remember this, you know? But again, me and Kev don't remember that, so we're like, why is that there?
Exactly.
You know, so yeah, that's a really good note. I didn't know that. I wanted, before we get to kind of wrapping our thoughts on season two, really, I want to get really quick thoughts and just quick hits on this. Three love stories we have kind of jumping out of season two. Do you care or do you not care? We'll do quick hits on this. Kev, Robot and Monster Girl, do you care or not care?
Not care. I don't. I'm interested maybe in seeing if he can not fix, but but just cure her de-aging. That's the most interesting part of that for me. It's not their love story.
Man, let's not talk about fixing women.
I learned nothing.
Don't be cutting this out and putting it in the label is getting cancelled. They're trying to fix women.
You know what women need men to do? Fix them. That's not. Dan, Robot and Monster Girl, do you care about this?
I'm not going to say much. Write it a little bit better.
Okay. I did care. I don't know. I cared when Robot changed himself. I cared a lot in season one. They've lost me completely because they made them normal. They're like, they took the interesting parts about both characters and then they said, we're not going to focus on that. We're going to focus on the people behind them. And I'm like, I don't care. You're just giving me a standard kind of rom-com drama now. Immortal and Duplicate. Dan, is this something you care about?
Kate annoys me. No.
Yeah. Kev?
I did till she appeared and she was alive. I thought it was a much more interesting thing if she'd have
gone on. Ever the controversy. Yeah. First take, we need to fix women. Second take, women are more interesting when they're dead.
Jesus. Digging yourself a hole here, Kev. Let's see if we can get a home run.
I never saw this in you. I'm not going to lie. I thought you were quite a nice guy. No.
I just think Immortal's character would have been better. Sorry.
I do. Like, yeah. Not to say that Fridging would have been better in this standpoint. Fridging would have been better in this standpoint. Like, Kate was more interesting when she was, there was the point. I'm about to make an argument for Fridging, so I'm just going to move on.
But, like, I will say as well, just that entire scene where it was, like, shocking that, like, Shrinking Ray dies and Kate Duplicate dies, and you don't have Rex side, is like, none of that means anything anymore. They're all grand.
Yeah, I agree. Last one, the big one, obviously, Mark and Adam Eve. Kev, is this something you're invested in?
I mean, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah.
that's kind of my thing.
Dan, is this something you're looking forward to now, known kind of?
Yes, and if they take a few lessons from this season and this is to the viewers, you will too.
Okay, interesting. I am invested in this, but my note is don't faff. Yeah, don't faff. Get to it. We know what's coming. You know what I mean? Like, and if it's not coming, then don't, you know what I mean? Go left, you know, but like, don't faff around. Don't do, like you said, learn the lessons from this season with Mark and Amber. Mark and Amber, I cared about in season one, but they just took so long. We realized they were breaking up and then they had four more episodes of shite. Don't push through that. We know what's coming. Don't bore us, get to the chorus. So that's kind of the individual plot strands and so on. I want to take time now to kind of reflect on season two as a whole. Dan, obviously, you seem to be coming out quite positive on the whole season. But like, and again, kind of, I want to take in not only the content, but also the presentation, because I think the way we got season two, even if it wasn't intended in two parts, that plays into how we feel about it as well. So what are your overall kind of reflections at the end of season two?
The two parts did hurt it, I think, and no one could have controlled that. There was a lot of real world stuff getting in the way we were consuming our media in that period. So that's just a series of unfortunate events, I guess. And I would have liked to, I think we would have enjoyed it more if we got this combined, which is something we've discussed so much on this show. Certain shows you get in, like, you know, a burst and you're very entertained, and then there's other stuff you get in pieces, which, like, obviously Secret Invasion being the key one, that maybe if you got that as a short TV movie, it might have been better, but the week to week hurt it. And Invincible, I think this split hurt it, because they could have ended the Traxxon genocide, Nolan's arrest, as a middle season, things are hotting up, storytelling device, as opposed to Till next time, kids. You know, and X amount of time later. So that was really what hurt it. And I think people are always going to look at this as not season two, but season 2.5. Mm. And it just doesn't have enough to become that. So maybe when we go back and watch this, you know, next year, when the whole gap has like left our initial thoughts, maybe season two will be a lot better. Knowing what's being set up that pertains directly to the season, and the stuff that we haven't seen or even had hints of yet, that will definitely be a factor. What they're doing, once again, to reassure everyone listening, you guys, it's going good. But once again, the pacing is off. They could have fit in a lot more without hurting anything. And I have a lot of faith knowing where things could go. But seeing it from your guys' point of view, which is really eye-opening, very, very interesting. I do, like, I'm empathizing a lot more with some of the stuff that I feel like you guys have been robbed of, that realistically, there's no excuse you guys should have had this storytelling taken away from you.
Mm, interesting. I do like the point of where we feel differently about it when we binge it. Like, I'm going to watch season one and two before season three comes out, and will I feel differently? I'm looking forward to kind of seeing that, and I hope I do. Kev, what are your overall kind of feelings leaving season two?
100% agree with the mid-season break that happened as well. That was just unfortunate. It did hurt it a ton. I'm, like you said as well, I'm looking forward to before season three, binging through the entire thing and seeing if that does make a difference, because I think there was some stuff maybe with Angstrom at the start, I think, of season two that you might have forgotten about and stuff as well by the end of it. And I think that did hurt it. The second part for me, the first two episodes in the second part of that season, I think were phenomenal, and they just didn't quite get the landing for me in the last two. But I'm like, it's a quality show with a quality cast, and I am looking forward to season three and to where stuff goes, because they have, even though like maybe at the expense of the end of season two, in terms of like a big kind of pull the trigger moment, we've got a ton to kind of look forward to now in season three that they have set up. I think as well. So yeah, very much looking forward to season three, but I just wish season two feels a bit like where Marvel went in phase two, where there was a lot of setup in all their stuff.
Yeah, great comparison. Yeah, so I love it.
That's kind of where it is for me anyway, but yeah.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it for the most part though.
Great show. Yeah, and look, I still really, really like the show Invincible. I look forward to it, and I feel lucky whenever it's coming on. So I enjoyed every single episode of this. I enjoyed the season, but I do have notes. But I want to clarify that with those notes, I'm critiquing this because season one, like I said earlier, left me kind of judging this on the level of a show that I see as a 10, that I'm like, this is the opportunity to be like The Boys, where I'm like, this is going to be one of the best superhero stories told. And kind of, I know that from fans like Dan and everything I've heard of people who've read the comics, that it has the juice, it backs it up, you know. So I wanted to hit on all parts, so that's where my critique is coming from. Not that I think it's bad, I do enjoy every part of it, and I want to clarify that. I do agree with everyone. I think splitting the show in two was a mistake. I think the approach of, and again, it's an executive decision, it was made due to the writer's strike, it's not the way the show was designed by the writer, so I don't feel comfortable critiquing the show itself for that, because they didn't make that decision, they didn't write it as such. And I think Amazon took a very blasé, it'll be grand approach to splitting the two, because it fitted their business needs, but they never looked into what it would do to the story and how it would make the audience feel, particularly with Angstrom leaving. You know what I mean? I think that just would have hit completely different if we'd have watched it within 8 weeks, like one after the other. I didn't mind. A lot of people went mad about there having to be 2 years between seasons here. I don't mind that as much as everyone else. Like, there is a lot of shows to get through. I watch a lot of TV and movies, so I'm fine with movies taking their time. And I prefer TV shows and movies taking their time to get it right. Like, you had Ryan Otley come out this week, and very informally, and like just a reply to a post, I think, on Reddit, came out and said, there's only going to be 1 year between series. So we'll get Invincible this time next year, or around 12 months again is what they're looking. And do you know what? I'm not really as psyched as others are to hear that they're already kind of deep into season three production, because I think there's a lot of lessons to learn from this season, and kind of particularly around how they're adapting things, and take your time. I'd rather they did a decent debrief of this and kind of looked and heard the likes of myself, Kev, and people who haven't read the comics as well, because it does seem to be hitting for yourself and a lot of the comic book readers then. And I think I'd like them to kind of just take that time rather than just jump back into it, because I think part of what didn't work for me at times, we spoke about this with the meta humor last week, was that to do that kind of stuff, and Invincible does it very well, but to get away with doing that kind of stuff and get away from it when there's so much going on, you have to be firing on all cylinders. And I feel that sometimes this show feels a bit more cocksure than it's amazing when it's not necessarily firing on all cylinders. The Viltrumites are something that I really think now they need to focus on. They're reminding me of the White Walkers in Game of Thrones, where they're like, just wait, lads, just wait. We've got this in the bag. But now I think they need to get to them and everything involved in that immediately. Like the teenage romance element of this show just does not work for me. And I think we need the characters and the kind of the loose strands and everything else, because it's getting baggy. There's so much going on. It's like, what's happening with Russ Livingston? Where are the Mahler twins? Like, what's happening over here? Like, what's going on? I think now we need to have that kind of Avengers moment, Avengers Assemble, of unifying all the different story components into one kind of singular focus, as Dan kind of hinted at, is kind of hopefully in our future. I think that needs to happen immediately. And that's why I don't know what is next in this story. I don't know if this is going to play out for much longer or if they're going to have that as Avengers Assemble style moment.
I'm literally just looking at the graphic novels back there, the titles, to see right, okay, what can they fit into season three. So, yeah.
Okay, interesting. But like, again, I don't know, but that's why I'd like them to have that debrief stage where they're like, we need to move this along. We need to get to this like now, and kind of, because this is what's going to keep people interested. And again, like kind of said, there's an element from this that kind of suggests the show believed its own hype from season one and got a bit complacent a little bit in season two. That like, they're going to love it. They'll wait 2 years. It'll be grand. We'll throw in a lot of meta jokes. They're going to love it because they're going to be so on side with everything we're doing. And again, there was that element that we discussed in this episode of forgetting the non-comic book fans here and forgetting to bring us on that journey. And again, that cocksure nature grates with us then, because we're not doing it. Keep it simple. Hit us with the stakes and just give it to us. Make sure you bring us along for that journey. And then I'll go back and read all your comics. I want to read it, but I don't want to read it because I enjoy watching the plot twists happen in the show. Last note as well, you touched on this earlier, Dan, but I really need to know this. Zero Mahler twins in season 2B is a war crime against television. Like, they are some of the best characters in the show. What are they doing? You gave us such a good cliffhanger at the in the mid-season finale. What are they doing now? But no, look, a season I enjoyed, a TV show I still very much enjoy. I'm looking forward to having it back. I just want it to be as good as it can be. And that's why I critique, and that's why I go in it a little bit. And I just don't feel season two hit. But some of my favorite like TV shows ever, like The Wire, The Sopranos, like every TV show, you can look at one series where it's like, okay, that was a bit of a lull. It's not bad, but it was a lull. And I'm okay if this is that season. I just don't want this to become the standard, if that makes sense. So that is Invincible Season 2. We did it, guys. It all went too quickly. And you know what? I felt like we really hit on something here. I feel like we had a good vibe going. So I'd like to get the band back together, if that's okay with you guys at some point. And there is another show that we're watching and we talk about every week. We don't have time to get to the new episode this week, but that's X-Men 97. So what I propose is, rather than doing weekly recaps, because guys, I'm not going to lie, after WrestleMania and all these shows that I've been doing, I need a break. But I would like to get this back together maybe around mid-May and talk through X-Men when the season's over. How's that sound with you guys?
That sounds great.
Yeah, yes. Definitely 100% up for that.
Okay.
To me, my X-Men.
Yes, there we go. To me, my X-Men, around mid-May, we'll be back. But yeah, no, guys, always a pleasure to discuss this with you. Thank you for your time over the past few weeks. Again, it's been too short. I would have loved another few episodes, but sure, look, we're playing the hand we're dealt. Dan Lyon, I'm Kev Keane. Thanks so much for joining us to discuss Invincible on Page 180.
Thanks, Matt.
That's all the time we have for Page 180 for the next few weeks, because guys, like I said there, it's been a really busy few weeks, so I'm going to take a short break, but I promise I will be back to discuss April at the Movies. Plus, like you said, we're going to do season recap of X-Men 97, and I also want to do a Stardust catch-up with Jared to discuss the Bad Batch. Until I am back, this has been Page 180. I've been Jared Leggett. Follow us on socials if you haven't already. And so you're a man who's a bat, and you call yourself... Don't you think that's a little lazy?